This is Preacher Lee speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. An organization that blends together education and renewable energy is one of the partners that will help in a ribbon-cutting ceremony tomorrow, Thursday, at the Sportsplex, which is on U.S. Highway 6 in Portage, for a solar array. And let's find out more about Sun Fund Ed and the other participants in this special ribbon-cutting ceremony coming up. Kelly Hipskin is a founder of the Indianapolis area-based Sun Fund Ed, and he is with us from his office in Indy. And thanks for joining us today, Kelly.
Hey, Chris, it's an absolute pleasure and good to get connected with you guys.
Well, thank you for letting us know about this big event coming up. Tell us first about Sun Fund Ed. What's it all about and how it gets to be able to put together what seem to be very different and disparate topics as education and renewable energy?
Yeah, you know, Chris, it's funny. We laugh a lot internally because, you know, education, as we all know, and my parents have both been educators and in the space for a long time. My dad's still dean of students in a high school, and education can be a very challenging and complex business. And then you tie in utilities and solar, and we're kind of like, why don't we just take on all the challenges at the same time? Mm-hmm. and have some fun doing it.
Well, they're both big challenges, yeah, to say the least. They're both very big challenges. It's surprising that they would put together. Well, how did the first ideas come about? And tell us about some of the other projects coming up to the one that's happening in Portage. How did you all get involved in those?
Sure. Thrilled to do that. So, you know, Sun funded the idea, kind of cliff notes in about 30 seconds here. Was really born, you know, the old stories of early stage ventures being born in the garage. Well, this one happened to be born in the living room with a friend of mine for 9 years. Patrick was sick. He was otherwise going to join my co-founder, Patrick Poore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Patrick and I have been friends for 9 years. I always heckle him in front of school saying, you know, he uses the friend term more loosely than I do. But we both have founded businesses in education. I've had a business that served about 60 school districts in Indiana. And was successfully sold to a company called Herf Jones. You may know those guys with, like, the rings and the yearbook.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And, oh, yeah, and served schools nationally in the U.S. and Canada, heading up innovation on behalf of a couple thousand employees. Patrick co-founded a business, Synovia, which helps with school bus fleet management and now has an app out called Here Comes the Bus, helping keep an eye on where students are for their parents and so forth and so on, because sometimes students fall asleep and can remain on the bus. So that serves about over 1,000 school districts, 125,000 plus buses under management nationwide. And we've both just been passionate, enthusiastic, you know, education entrepreneurs who like to run a good business and do good business while doing good. And he exited a business after I did, a venture I was in, and he had exited and asked for a little bit of friendly advice. And long story short, I said, hey, man, you know, life's too short. I want to make a tangible and positive difference in the classroom and the bottom line of schools, and I don't want to have some really, you know, a lot of friction in the process and a lot of money up front, because schools are obviously constrained by decisions by committee and capital. So how could we eliminate those frictions and find something that could be a long-term service that could that we could see students better off from something that we provided, you know, if we were ever to step away from it? And Sun Funded is the answer to that dream and to that North Star. And you know, schools pay a dollar. We bring all the investment and capital. We lower their electric bill year one. NEO, our partner in Portage, is going to save about 25% off their electrical bill in the first year and not have to deal with cost-plus inflation long-term, so save even more. And then we've granted them $75,000 worth of classroom programs. And frankly, this is an innovative, cutting-edge, I hate to use the term loosely, but kind of revolutionary model for Indiana, which is kind of behind the East and West Coast with renewables, and it's really exciting to be a part of that change and that advancement, and not in the negative light sometimes that comes with renewable energy, but in the positive light specifically for schools.
I know that it is not a new idea for schools to get involved in renewable energy. Even decades ago, school districts maybe outside of school someplace, one comes in mind in particular in Benton County, south of us, they'd mm-hmm. be able to put up wind turbines to be able to generate enough electricity, and with batteries been able to save back and in turn cut back on their electricity costs of that particular building. So it's not a new idea, but it seems that with solar energy being very much in the news these days and creating green jobs, it's all very important, isn't it?
It's hugely important. I'm going to give you a few stats that might raise the eyebrows of some of your listeners here that maybe aren't aren't fully versed in the renewable industry. Solar is projected to grow macroly, like around the world. It's projected to grow 1,000% over the next 10 years. It's the fastest growing industry percentage-wise in the country and in the world. It is now proven and validated. It's the cheapest form of electricity in the world. And, you know, it is one of those things that a lot of people think, oh, it's relatively new, and maybe this is coming up because of just new cutting-edge technology in the last 5 years. There's some truth to efficiencies, but that's not fully accurate. The tax credit that's out there has had investors globally investing more money in the last 3, 4, 5 years in solar than all of humanity combined before that. Wow. And that has driven the cost down because more solar is being purchased. It's created efficiencies on the construction side. It's created efficiencies on the manufacturing side. And you've seen the cost of solar come down about 80%+ in the last 9 or 10 years. So really, the economics and the payback period has shrunk, and the investors, you know, banks and insurance companies are putting a lot of money in equity deals into this. So now you're just starting to see that this is something that's not going to change, regardless of. And I don't want to get political. I know this is like probably the most political time in our history, right? So I'm not trying to compete for one side of the aisle or the other with some of these comments. But regardless of people's, you know, interest in the Green New Deal or not, or if solar works or not, solar's here and it's coming. You know, with new regulations approved, you know, by FERC federally, you know, there are some game-changing, cutting-edge things now that are going to be allowed to where you can't ignore solar. It's just where and when and how much of it is coming.
And we know that an Illinois company is very interested in setting up a solar energy array in South Lake County, and there are others that are interested in this idea as well. Will you tell us a little bit about the particulars for the ribbon cutting event that's going to happen on November 5th on Thursday morning there at the Sportsplex in Portage?
Yeah, for everybody up there in the you know, I guess we can call this regional, right? Because it's in the title of your show. You know, I'm excited to come back to Portage. I don't know if you know this yet, Chris, or not, or any of your listeners do. Maybe they'd recognize the last name, but my father was assistant basketball coach and guidance counselor at Portage Township Schools many moons ago. And then we moved to Hobart because he became the head basketball coach at Hobart, Keith Hipskin. And my mom was an elementary teacher for many years at Nativity of Our Savior there in Portage, Indiana. And NEO, the school, is a relatively new charter school. They're interesting because unlike some charter schools, like they have an adult ed program that was a spin out of Portage Township when they did away with the program. So they work really closely with the public schools up there. And Camelot Bowling Alley was the famous bowling alley in the region where I bowled my first turkey. So I will tell you that there is personal pride and gratification from myself and my family to know that the very first service agreement for solar and the way that electricity is going to be changed and consumed in the state of Indiana is in Portage, Indiana, my old hometown. And it's absolutely probably the most personally gratifying experience of my professional career. NEO has been an incredible partner. You know, some schools and boards, when something's new, fear kicks in and anxiety, and, you know, they often don't want to be the first. They don't want to be the last either, but they don't want to be the first. And I will tell you, Rebecca Reiner and her team have embraced this from day one. They've always wanted to do an energy program because they focus on the trades heavily and other programs that benefit, you know, finding people jobs and job placement and tackling some of the gaps within the trades industry, you know, specifically even there in the region. So, you know, their mission aligns nicely with renewable energy, and it aligns perfectly with SunFunded. And they're going to look really good and be really innovative, not only on behalf of Portage and the region, but for the entire state and education as a whole.
Now, can you bring us up to date if there are any other related projects, Kelly, that will be worked through SunFunded Ed and other organizations to be able to spread renewable energy like solar energy around the Northwest Indiana area?
Well, actually, we've met with several of the schools around Northwest Indiana as our test campaign over 2 years ago. So, you know, in full transparency, when you're early on, you don't know what you don't know and how to talk all the same language as schools. We are an entirely different company now. We've got the answers. We've already got the interconnection agreement approved with NIPSCO. We've vet and validated the model. You know, we're fully funded. We've got, you know, partners on the construction side that have built 150 megawatts worth of solar. So, I mean, we've got all that. we would encourage all of the schools in Northwest Indiana to reach out again and see if we can qualify them. Taylor University has signed our long-term solar as a service agreement, as well as another university about to sign soon. I won't disclose their name until it's officially inked, but it will be a really big, notable one. And then we have construction beginning at Otsego Public Schools, just north up there in Michigan, this month. And then Ovid Elsie and Peace Lutheran in Michigan are also beginning construction soon, as well as a variety of other schools that are under LOI with us. We have about 40 schools that have signed our LOI, and we have many that are evaluating our long-term agreement. And it's going to be an exciting year for education, for taxpayers, and for SunFunded in 2021. And I want to leave you with also this really interesting stat, Chris.
All right.
If we did just 15% of the public schools in Indiana, we'd save taxpayers over the life of our service about $1 billion.
Wow. Wow. Once again, this ribbon-cutting ceremony coming up with NEO and with SunFunded. It's a solar array that will be officially unveiled and put into service on Thursday, November 5th. The ceremony is going to be at 9 a.m., and it'll be at the Sportsplex, which is on U.S. Highway 6 in Portage. And Kelly Hipskin, thank you very much for telling us about this and about the not only SunFunded Ed, but a little about NEO, the organization in Portage that is going to take advantage of solar power to save some electric bills.
And I'm excited to see you and everybody up in the region tomorrow and be back home in Portage, Indiana. Really look forward to it.
Well, thank you very much, and hope to have you back on to talk about some more projects involving solar energy, renewable energy in general, and education. Thanks very much for being with us today.
You got it, Chris. Look forward to it.
Kelly Hipson is a founder of Indianapolis-based SunFunded, which is an organization that helps blend together education and renewable energy. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Well, we have more results, of course, from yesterday's elections here in Northwest Indiana, and people have been watching the race for the first congressional district seat that is being set aside by the retiring Pete Visklosky. And the man who is going to be headed to Washington to take that post is Frank Brevan, who's currently the North Township trustee here in Lake County, but he's been chosen by the voters here in Northwest Indiana in the first district to become their next representative in Washington. And Frank, thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me. How are you doing? I just want to say hello to everyone and happy post-election day.
Well, I'm doing all right, and congratulations to you. That for like all of us, it's been a very long night. When did you finally officially, at least unofficially, of course, we know that the actual totals haven't been officially certified yet, but they're on that way. When did you find out that you've picked up the seat for sure?
I think about 10 o'clock, 10:45. Mm-hmm. When the AP called it, and they were confident that statistically there was it was finalized.
Have you found that this particular part of the election, that is to say that the general election campaign, was a little tougher to do than the coronavirus pandemic shortened primary campaign, which you had the most candidates that you had to fight against, had more than a dozen people that wanted to get the Democratic nomination?
Right. I would say they were both. They were equally challenging. Whenever you're going through a health crisis, you've got to evolve and you have to figure out a way to campaign and get your message out. But you know what? It's a tremendous opportunity to learn firsthand what people are going through and how the national or the pandemic is affecting all of us here in the first district. And so the campaign was our ability to learn that we have to really focus on a national strategy to get the pandemic under control, and secondly, to get Northwest Indiana back to work. There are a lot of people who still have lost their job or are underemployed, and we have to find ways to be able to make sure we're getting them back to work and focusing on an infrastructure bill that we can reinvest in our communities and use American steel and, you know, make sure our labor force gets back to work. And I also want to say that, you know, when you're handling and going through a pandemic, it brings people closer together. And I think that there was a great appetite for civility and all of us trying to find ways to come up with solutions together. And so now we represent 750,000 people. And going forward, we're going to work with everyone in the district to find the best solution to our challenges.
You've gotten, of course, a note of congratulations, of course, from Pete Visklosky. When did you hear from Pete? Probably not long after that you got more official word that you had the seat.
We actually haven't talked personally, mm-hmm. But we intend to here in the near future. And he did send a correspondence and congratulated us, and you know, we had his endorsement, and now we have to continue his legacy of making sure that we're focused on, you know, the working men and women of our district and a quality of life. You know, he brought to us and was able to designate Lake Michigan, the dunes, as a national park. We have to work extremely hard as a member of Congress to make sure we have clean air and clean water and that we utilize that. And also with the double tracking extension of the South Shore, that will be a great economic boom to Northwest Indiana. And we have to really focus on the corridor along the lake and also all of Lake Porter and LaPorte County. So we have a lot of work to do. As you mentioned, during the pandemic, it's a very serious time, and we have to, you know, roll our sleeves up and get back to work right away.
What do you find to be probably the most challenge once you get into Washington and working with many members, some reelected and some new members of the House of Representatives, so when the next session comes up?
Well, you know, it appears like that we'll have to have a bipartisan approach towards issues to the best of our ability. And my intentions are to find like-minded people who want to be able to find the center of an issue and be able to find the answers to them and move forward. So, you know, economic development, getting ourselves back on track, access to health care, access to mental health, making sure that we have, you know, a plan to get through the pandemic. And that we're doing that to the best of our ability to make sure people are safe and that we're squashing it and have vaccines. So on the federal side, there are many, many issues that we can absolutely work together to find solutions. And I talk about the South Shore and also the extension of South Shore and double tracking. Mm-hmm. You know, that was Congressman Visclawski, that was the two United States senators, that was the administration, that was state government, Governor Holcomb, and that was local government all coming together to invest in our future. And so those are the things, those are the types of results that I believe our district is looking for.
When you had an opportunity to take a breath, so to speak, as the campaign ended, and you got better indication last evening that that you were going to win the election and become the next first district Congress member to go to Washington from Northwest Indiana, did you have an opportunity? But you mentioned some things in particular that you would like to work on. Were there any thoughts that came to your mind at the time that but some of the supporters have had to say to you they would like for you to try to tackle if you're able to do so?
Absolutely. They overwhelmingly want to make sure that we have access to health care, and that not only do we have access, but define that as affordability and being able to protect pre-existing conditions and access to mental health and addictive services. A great link to poverty is mental health and also addictive services. And, you know, very often the last week of when I was out and about, people were talking about workforce development, making sure that people who aren't going to college or college isn't for them or are underemployed, that they have access to the trade and they have access to the next generation of manufacturing jobs. And so in all communities, people had talked to me about that, is making sure that we have access to the trades and really focus on workforce development. Also, you know, making sure that we protect our environment with clean air and clean water was an issue. And again, the pandemic. So those are all things that people are talking about every day that are on their mind.
Well, Frank, thank you for taking time to after the election on a day that you're probably trying to catch up on some rest after a very long, very, very busy night last night on election night. And we're looking forward to have a chance to talk with you in the future as you get relocated into the House of Representatives, and come back and talk with us again soon, we hope.
Well, I thank you very much, Chris, and I thank you for everything that you do. You know, being engaged in the community and letting people know and using the platform to be able to educate people is extremely important. So I thank you. How was your election night?
It was long. And we were
it's
just
still
like,
going on.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's the other thing. That's the other half of it too, to speak of, the half that has not yet been completed. But it's not surprising. We were looking at how the races were shaping up and telling people about them through the night. Some nice commentary from one of our colleagues, Purdue University Northwest Political Science Professor Richard Rupp. One of the things that I was thinking in particular just now that we brought up in our discussions, a time where how civility is going to play such a big role in trying to bring everybody back together again now that whenever the election actually does finish up. And we're certainly hoping that and we know you're going to do your part, at least in Washington when you get there. And we certainly hope that have some happy stories that come out of this as well.
I agree. I consistently will say civility and steady leadership. There was an appetite for that. And, you know, I'm a fan of Mr. Richard Rupp. We follow each other on a radio station. And he is well organized, and he is a good mind. So I appreciate his opinions, and I agree with him wholeheartedly that stability is extremely important to be able to find solutions.
Well, Frank, thank you very much for talking with us today, and we hope that we have another conversation after the first of the year, and you'll get settled in, and we'll have more good things to talk about for residents here in Northwest Indiana.
I thank you very much, and anytime I could join you on any issues that are approaching us here in the near future, I would love an opportunity, and thank you for giving this opportunity into the electorate and the 750,000 members throughout Lake Porter and LaPorte County. I'm humbled and honored to hold this position, and I'm going to work every single minute as hard as you do to make sure Northwest Indiana thrives.
Frank Ravan, the Democrat, is the person who is going to succeed retiring Congressman Pete Fisklosky. He'll be going to Washington as the next 1st District Congressional Representative. Thank you very much. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Gary International Film Festival is 10 years old this year, and they're going to launch it, obviously, because of the coronavirus pandemic in a different way, but there's still going to be a big celebration over 10 days. Let's find out more about this year's event. Karen Toering is the director of the Gary International Black Film Festival, and she is with us from her home, safe, we hope, and willing to talk about what's planned for the very, very important online event this year. Karen, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Hey there, Chris. Thank you.
Well, tell us the important things that folks should know about the fact that the International Black Film Festival is going to be online this year. And we know the reasons why, but what kind of setups are there? And tell us what's all on the agenda for this year's event.
Well, yeah, the festival will be online this year, and you can go to GaryBlackFilmFest.org. And get the schedule and all of the events that are going to happen. And we're pretty excited. Normally, the festival is a weekend event. We usually start on Friday and end on Sunday. But because it's our 10th anniversary, we're going to go for 10 straight days, starting on November 10th and ending on November 20th. And yeah, we have an incredible lineup of films. The festival usually receives roughly 100 to 250 entries per year, depending on the year. But this year, Chris, we got 1,900 entries.
Oh, my goodness.
From around
the
world.
Oh.
And six continents. So it's been a lot of work for the festival reviewers to sort through all of those films and come up with some gems. Folks, and we think people are going to like the lineup that we have.
That's great.
It's exciting because you get to watch at home, and you will be able to watch the films for 48 hours. So that's different. So when we publish the schedule, you can find the schedule online on Facebook or Instagram, or go to our website, GaryBlackFilmFest.org, and see the list of films. But once you sign up for a film or buy a ticket, you will be able to watch that film for the next 48 hours at your leisure, in your jammies, or wherever, whatever you wear at home. I'm pretty much found in my jammies most of the time, except for the waist up, you know, for those Zoom meetings that we all have. And enjoy the film, and then we will have live talkbacks that are free with some of the films that you can watch either on YouTube or Facebook, or once again, you can go back to the website and watch those there.
I know you've got some great highlights of the events coming up here, the films that are going to be shown during those 10 days, and it's a combination of, of narrative and documentaries and all kind of feature-length films and shorts and all that, and a few things you're bringing back, and one in particular that folks here in Northwest Indiana will definitely want to see if they've never seen it before, and that's Nation Time Gary. Tell us about how it's coming back.
Well, Nation Time Gary is about the 1972 Black political convention when 10,000 people came to Gary to set a new Black agenda. And the film is really interesting because it features some political figures that are here, that, you know, Jesse Jackson, and Shirley Chisholm and Amiri Baraka and so many others who came to Gary, Indiana, to basically side a political agenda for Black people in 1972. And it's really reminiscent of the times that we are facing right now, mm-hmm. you know, with the current political climate and the Black Lives Matter movement being so very present in everyone's mind. So it's a look at the 1972 convention, which we feel like sort of gave birth to the movements that we see today. And we will have a special panel of folks who were actually there at the 1972 Black Convention. And that panel is going to be on here. I'm scrolling down, looking at my sheet here. Mm-hmm. That panel will be Sunday, November 15th at 6 p.m. And folks will be able to hear from the people who were there at the 1972 Black National Convention that was held in Gary. And we're pretty excited about that. And we think folks will be able to watch the film. Once again, you can order the film, watch it at any time, and then come back on November 15th at 6 o'clock and hear from the people who were there.
We're talking with Karen Towing, who is the director of the Gary International Black Film Festival coming up beginning November 10th, and it'll be all online. And Karen, I know in particular that you always try to have some interesting roundtable and panel discussions that focus in on certain topics. And this time around, because it's the 10th annual event, that you're going to spend time discussing and maybe even some debates may come up about topics like cinematographers as well as Black women. Tell us about those two sessions coming up.
Yeah, we do have two Academy-nominated Black cinematographers who are going to talk about what it's like to be on inside of the industry, inside Hollywood. That'll feature Eric Bronco, who was the cinematographer that is on a pretty popular film now on Netflix called The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a play on the name, which is, you know, just really kind of burning up Netflix and incredibly popular film. And Hans Charles, who was the cinematographer on Ava DuVernay's film 13. And they'll be talking about, you know, get these two guys together, and of course they want to talk about the equipment and the technology, but they'll also be talking about their favorite cinematographers and directors. And that should be a pretty lively conversation, and that's going to happen on, I think that's on Thursday. This is a big schedule, so I have to sort of scroll around.
Well, I don't blame you for looking it up.
And get the details for all of our panels. And then we'll have a panel on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock that features women directors, both regional and national directors of film and television. And those conversations, again, you know, give you an inside look at what it's like, not only for Black people in Hollywood and independent media and television, but also women who face, you know, additional challenges breaking into an industry and being part of an industry that is very, very male dominated. We also have another, I'm excited about a panel of Black animators. These are folks that are behind some of your favorite animated series, and in these COVID times, animators are a hot commodity. You know, with sheltering in place and all of those things, we're finding that a lot more animation is coming online, and animators are in demand. And so it's really exciting to see these young Black animators really come into their own, and we're pretty excited about that too. Also, you know, we're super excited to have producer and director and writer Bill Duke is going to be joining us on Sunday afternoon, that would be November 15th, for a panel discussion with young filmmakers. So this will be sort of a generational conversation. Bill Duke is a veteran in the industry who's done several films, movies, and television, who will be also joined by some of the new directors that are coming on board, writers and directors, and that's Sunday afternoon. So our panels will be rich with dialogue and, like you said, maybe a little controversy, but they'll give folks a really good look at the industry from a Black perspective.
Now, closing night is coming up on November 20th, and that's going to be a very special night as well, too, with some special awards, I understand.
Yes, we will. Every year, we give out an award for someone who's made an impact in Gary through their body of work and their relationship to the community, and that is called the GIBFF Impact Award. I'm not going to tell you who's going to get it. We're going to reveal that on closing night. And then we also do the Kelechukwu Berinfre Vanguard Award, and that's given to an artist whose work is really about purpose and about social justice and about the creative process that we know is in Gary, okay? Gary is the home of some really, really talented folks, and the Kelechukwu Berinfre Award celebrates that talent.
Now, Karen, you mentioned at the start of our conversation that there were about 1,200 or plus of entries that came in this year for this 10th annual. Yes, you have to catch your breath when you talk those numbers. Ooh. To be sure. Yes, for this year's for the 10th annual Gary International Black Film Festival, what kind of other work that had to be done here behind the scenes to get ready for the event that gets underway on November 10th?
Right. Yeah. So we had entries from around the world, and we had about 60 people from across the country viewing those films and rating those films and thinking about whether or not those films would represent, you know, the best and the brightest in independent filmmaking. And that took us several months to get through all of those films. And this year we'll have, over the course of the 10 days, we'll have just under 60 films. So we took the 1,300 entries and narrowed them down to 60. And folks will not only be able to watch the film, but you'll also be able to check in and talk to some of the filmmakers about their work as well.
That's great to hear. Once again, what's that website address so people can take a look at the schedule, make note of it, print it off if they need to do so, and where they can get their tickets as well, the passes for the films coming up?
You can get tickets and passes at GaryBlackFilmFest.org.
Well, Karen, thank you very much for all the great information. We're looking forward to this 10th annual Gary International Black Film Festival. And thank you, Karen Toing, for telling us all about it. And the best of luck to you and everybody involved in the festival this year.
Thanks, Chris. And we'll see you online at the Gary International Black Film Festival.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow.